Star Wars, The Last Command by Timothy Zahn, continued. Cassette number 10, side 2.
You serve him, as do we.
Mara stared at him through the darkness, and suddenly her heart seemed to freeze in her chest.
You mean Skywalker?
You did not know?
Mara turned away from him, staring down at the sleeping form no more than a meter away from her feet, a horrible numbness flooding through her. Suddenly, finally, after all these years, the last elusive piece had fallen into place. The Emperor didn't want her to kill Skywalker for his own sake. It was, instead, one final act of vengeance against his father.
You will kill Luke Skywalker.
And in the space of a few heartbeats, everything Mara had believed about herself, her hatred, her mission, her entire life, had turned from certainty to confusion.
You will kill Luke Skywalker. You will kill Luke Skywalker. You will kill Luke Skywalker.
No, she muttered at the voice through clenched teeth. Not like that. My decision. My reasons.
But the voice continued unabated. Perhaps it was her resistance and defiance fueling it now, or perhaps the deeper power in the Force that Skywalker had given her over the past few days had made her more receptive to it.
You will kill Luke Skywalker. You will kill Luke Skywalker.
But you are another matter, Mara Jade.
Mara jerked, the sudden motion banging the back of her head against the tree trunk behind her. Another voice. But this one wasn't coming from inside her. It was coming from...
I have seen you in my meditations, the voice continued placidly. Have seen you coming to me and kneeling at my feet. You will be mine, and Skywalker will follow, one way or another.
Mara shook her head violently, trying to shake away the words and thoughts. The second voice seemed to laugh. Then, suddenly, the words and laughter disappeared beneath a distant but steady pressure against her mind. Setting her teeth, she pushed back against it. Dimly, she heard the voice laugh again at her efforts. And then, with a suddenness that made her catch her breath, the pressure was gone.
Are you all right? Skywalker's voice asked quietly.
Mara looked down. Skywalker had risen up on one elbow, his silhouetted face turned toward her.
Did you hear it, too? She asked.
I didn't hear any words, but I felt the pressure.
Mara looked up toward the leaf canopy overhead.
It's Kabalth, she said. He's here.
Yes, Skywalker said, and she could hear the apprehension in his voice.
He'd faced Kabalth once back on Jomark, and nearly lost out to him.
So what now?
Mara asked, rubbing at the sweat around her mouth with a shaking hand. We abort the mission? The silhouette shrugged.
How? We're only a couple of days from the mountain. It'd take us a lot longer than that to get back to the Falcon.
Except that the Imperials know we're here now.
Maybe, Skywalker said slowly. But maybe not.
Did the contact cut off suddenly for you, too? She frowned, and suddenly it hit her.
You think they moved some Isalamiri around him?
Or else strapped him into one of those frames you were using on Jomark, Skywalker said. Either way, it would imply he was a prisoner.
Mara thought about that. If so, he might not be interested in telling his captors about the invaders moving toward the mountain. She looked sharply at him as another thought suddenly occurred to her.
Did you know Cabalth was going to come? She demanded. Is that why you wanted me to practice my old Jedi training?
I didn't know he'd be here, Skywalker said, but I knew we would eventually have to face him again. He said that himself on Jomark.
Mara shivered, kneeling at my feet. I don't want to face him, Skywalker.
Neither do I, he said softly. But I think we have to. He sighed, and then quietly he peeled off the top of his bedroll and got to his feet. Why don't you go get some sleep, he said, stepping over to her side. I'm awake now anyway, and you took the brunt of that attack.
All right, Mara said, too tired to argue. If you need any help, call me.
I will. She picked her way across Calrissian and the Wookiee to her bedroll and crawled into it. Her last memory, as she dropped off to sleep, was of the voice in the back of her mind. You will kill Luke Skywalker.
Chapter 22. The report came in from Mount Tantus during ship's night, and was waiting for him when Pelion arrived on the bridge in the morning. The Dreklor had reached Wayland more or less on schedule 6 hours previously, had offloaded its passengers, and had left the system bound for Valrar as per orders. General Covell had refused to take command until local morning. Pelion frowned. Refused to take command? That didn't sound like Covell. Captain Pelion, the comm officer called up to him. Sir, we're getting a holo transmission from Colonel Selid on Wayland. It's marked urgent.
Put it through to the aft bridge hologram pod, Pelion instructed,
getting up from his command chair and heading aft. Signal the Grand Admiral to... Never mind, he interrupted himself, as through the archway he spotted Thrawn and Rook coming up the steps into the aft bridge. Thrawn saw him, too.
What's wrong, Captain?
Urgent message from Wayland, sir, Pelion said, gesturing toward the hologram pod. The image of an Imperial officer was already waiting, and even in a quarter-size holo, Pelion could see the younger man's nervousness.
Probably Cabalth, Thrawn predicted darkly.
They reached position in front of the hologram pod, and Thrawn nodded to the image.
Colonel Selid, this is Grand Admiral Thrawn. Report.
Sir, Selid said, his parade ground posture stiffening even more, I regret to inform you, Admiral, of the sudden death of General Covell. Pelion felt his mouth fall open a couple of centimeters.
How?
He asked.
We don't know yet, sir, Selid said. He apparently died in his sleep. The medics are still running tests, but so far all they can suggest is that large portions of the general's brain had simply shut down.
Brain tissue does not simply shut down, Colonel, Thrawn said. There has to be a reason for it.
Selid seemed to wince.
Yes, sir. I'm sorry, sir. I didn't mean it that way.
I know you didn't, Thrawn assured him. What about the rest of the passengers?
The medics are checking them all now, Selid said. No problems so far. Rather, they're checking all those still within the garrison. General Covell's troops, the company that arrived on the Dracula with him, had already been dispersed outside the mountain when he died.
What? The whole company? Pelion asked.
What for?
I don't know, sir, Selid said.
General Covell gave the orders, after the big meeting, I mean, before he died.
Perhaps we'd better have the story from the beginning, Colonel, Thrawn cut him off. Tell me everything.
Yes, sir.
Selid visibly pulled himself together. General Covell and the others were landed via shuttle approximately 6 hours ago.
I tried to turn over command of the garrison to him, but he refused. He then insisted on having a private word with his troops in one of the officers' mess halls.
Which troops? Thrawn asked. The whole garrison?
No, sir. Just the ones who'd accompanied him on the Dreklor. He said he had some special orders to give them.
Pelion looked at Thrawn. I'd have thought he'd have had plenty of time aboard ship for special orders.
Yes, Thrawn agreed. One would think so.
Maybe it was Cabal's idea, sir, Sellard suggested. He was at the general's side from the minute they got off the shuttle, muttering, sort of, the whole time.
Was he now? Thrawn said thoughtfully.
His voice was calm, but there was something beneath it that sent a shiver up Pelion's back.
Where is Master Cabal now?
Up in the Emperor's old royal chambers, Salad said. General Covell insisted they be open for him. Would he be above the Isalamiri influence up there? Pelion murmured.
Thrawn shook his head. I doubt it. According to my calculations, the entire mountain and some of the surrounding area should be within the force empty bubble. What happened then, Colonel?
The general spent about 15 minutes talking to his troops, Sellard said. When he came out, he told me that he'd given them secret orders that had come directly from you, Admiral, and that I wasn't to interfere.
And then they left the mountain?
After stripping one of the supply rooms of field gear and explosives, yes, Sellard said. Actually, they spent a couple more hours inside the garrison before leaving, familiarizing themselves with the layout, the general said. After they left, Cabal escorted the general to his quarters and then was himself escorted to the royal chambers by two of my stormtroopers. I put the rest of the garrison back onto standard nighttime routine, and that was it. Until this morning, when the orderly found the general.
So Cabal wasn't with Covell at the time of his death? Thrawn asked.
No, sir, Sellard said. Though the medics don't think the general lived very long after Cabal left him.
And he was with the general up until that time?
Yes, sir.
Pelion threw Thrawn a sideways look.
The Grand Admiral was staring at nothing, his glowing red eyes narrowed to slits.
Tell me, Colonel, what was your impression of General Covell?
Well, Sellard hesitated, I'd have to say I was a bit disappointed, sir.
How so?
He just wasn't what I was expecting, Admiral, Sellard said, sounding distinctly uncomfortable. Pelion didn't blame him. Criticizing one senior officer in front of another was a serious breach of military etiquette, especially between different branches of the service. He seemed... Distant is the word I'd have to use, sir. He implied that my security was poor and that he would be making some important changes, but he wouldn't talk to me about them. In fact, he hardly spoke to me the whole time he was here. And it wasn't just me. He was short with the other officers who tried to talk to him as well. That was his privilege, of course, and he may have just been tired. But it didn't seem to fit with what I'd heard of the general's reputation.
No, it doesn't, Thrawn said. Is the hologram pad in the Emperor's old throne room operational, Colonel?
Yes, sir. Though Cabal may not be in the throne room itself.
He will be, Thrawn said coldly. Connect me with him.
Yes, sir.
Sellard's image vanished, replaced by the pause symbol.
You think Cabal did something to Covell? Pelion asked quietly.
I see no other likely explanation, Thrawn said. My guess is that our beloved Jedi Master was trying to take over Covell's mind, perhaps even replacing entire sections of it with his own. When they hit the Isalamir bubble, and he lost that direct contact,
There wasn't enough of Covell left to keep him alive for long.
I see.
Pelion turned his head away from the Grand Admiral, a darkening anger flowing through him. He'd warned Thrawn about what Cabalth might do, had warned him over and over again. What are you going to do about it? The pause symbol vanished before Thrawn could answer, but it wasn't the standard quarter-size figure that replaced it. Instead, a huge image of Cabalth's face suddenly glared out at them, jolting Pelion an involuntary step backwards. Thrawn didn't even twitch.
Good morning, Master Cabalth, the Grand Admiral said, his voice mirror smooth. I see you've discovered the Emperor's private hologram setting.
Grand Admiral Thrawn, Cabalth said, his own voice cold and arrogant. Is this how you reward my work on behalf of your ambitions, by an act of betrayal?
If there is betrayal, it's on your side, Master Cabalth, Thrawn said. What did you do to General Covell?
Cabalth ignored the question.
The Force is not so easily betrayed as you think, he said. And never forget this, Grand Admiral Thrawn. With my destruction will come your own. I have foreseen it.
He stopped, glaring back and forth at the two of them. For a handful of heartbeats, Thrawn remained silent.
Are you finished? He asked at last.
Cabalth frowned, the play of uncertainty and nervousness easily visible in the magnified face. For all its intimidating majesty, the Emperor's personal hologram setting clearly had its own set of drawbacks.
For now, Cabalth said, have you some feeble defense to offer?
I have nothing to defend, Master Cabalth, Thrawn said. It was you who insisted on going to Wayland. Now, tell me what you did to General Covell.
You will first restore the Force to me.
The Salamiri will stay where they are, Thrawn said. Tell me what you did to General Covell.
For a moment, the two men glared at each other. Cabalth's glare crumbled first, and for a moment it looked as if he was going to fold. But then the old man's jaw jutted out, and once again he was the arrogant Jedi Master.
General Covell was mine to do with as I pleased, he said, as is everything in my empire.
Thank you, Thrawn said. That's all I need to know. Colonel Selid.
The huge face vanished and was replaced by Selid's quarter-size image.
Yes, Admiral?
Instructions, Colonel, Thrawn told him. First of all, Master Cabalth is hereby placed under arrest. You may allow him free run of the royal chambers and Emperor's throne room, but he is not to leave there. All control circuits from those floors will be disconnected, of course. Secondly, you're to initiate inquiries as to precisely where General Covell's troops were seen within the mountain before they left.
Why don't we ask the troops themselves, sir? Selid suggested. They presumably have comlinks with them.
Because I'm not certain we could trust their answers, Thrawn told him. Which brings me to my third order. None of the troops which left the mountain under General Covell's orders are to be allowed back in.
Selid's jaw dropped visibly.
Sir? You heard correctly, Thrawn told him. Another transport will arrive for them in a few days, at which time they'll be rounded up and taken off the planet. But under no circumstances are they to be allowed back into the mountain.
Yes, sir, Selid said, pondering. But, sir, what do I tell them?
You may tell them the truth, Thrawn said quietly, that their orders came not from General Covell,
and certainly not from me, but from a traitor to the Empire. Until intelligence can sort through the details, the entire company will be considered as under suspicion, as unwitting accomplices to treason.
The word seemed to hang before them in the air.
Understood, sir, Salad said at last.
Good, Thrawn said. You are, of course, reinstated as garrison commander. Any questions?
Salad drew himself up. No, sir.
Good. Carry on, Colonel. Chimera out.
The figure vanished from the hologram pod. Do you think it's safe to leave Kabauth there, sir? Pelion asked.
There's nowhere in the Empire safer, Thrawn pointed out. At least, not yet.
Pelion frowned. I don't understand.
His use to the Empire is rapidly nearing an end, Captain, Thrawn said, turning and walking beneath the archway into the main section of the bridge. However, he still has one last role to play in our long-term consolidation of power.
He paused at the aft edge of the command walkway.
Kabauth is insane, Captain. That we both agree on. But such insanity is in his mind, not in his body.
Pelion stared at him. Are you suggesting we clone him?
Why not? Thrawn asked. Not at Mount Tantus itself, certainly, given the conditions there. Most likely not at the speed which that facility allows, either. That's all well and good for techs and TIE fighter pilots, but not a project of this delicacy. No, I envision bringing such a clone to childhood, and then allowing it to grow to maturity at a normal pace for its last 10 or 15 years. Under suitable upbringing conditions, of course.
I see, Pelion said, struggling to keep his voice steady. A young Kabauth, or maybe 2 or 10 or 20 of them, running loose around the galaxy. This was an idea that was going to take some getting used to. Where would you set up this other cloning facility?
Somewhere absolutely secure, Thrawn said. Possibly on one of the worlds in the unknown regions where I once served the Emperor. You'll instruct intelligence to begin searching for a suitable location after we've crushed the rebels at Bilbringi.
Pelion felt his lip twitch. Right, the dangerously ethereal Bilbringi attack. What with his Kabauth thing, he'd almost forgotten the main business of the day, or his reservations concerning it.
Yes, sir. Admiral, I'm forced to remind you that all the evidence still indicates Tangreen is the probable point of attack. I'm aware of the evidence, Captain, Thrawn said. Nevertheless, they will be at Bilbringi.
He sent his gaze leisurely around his bridge, his glowing red eyes missing nothing, and the crewers knew it. At every station, from the crew pits to the lateral consoles, there were the subtle sounds and movements of men aware that their commander was watching and striving to show him their best.
And so will we, the Grand Admiral added to Pelion. Set course for Bilbringi, Captain, and let us prepare to meet our guests.
Wedge drained the last of his cup and set it back on the chipped and stained wood of the small table, glancing across the noisy Mumbri Storve cantina as he did so. The place was as crowded as it had been when he, Jansen, and Hobby had come in an hour earlier, but the texture of the crowd had changed quite a bit. Most of the younger people had left, couples and groups both, and had been replaced by an older and decidedly seedier-looking bunch. The fringe types were drifting in, which meant it was time for them to be drifting out. His fellow Rogue Squadron pilots knew it, too. Time to go, Hobby suggested,
his voice just audible over the noise.
Right, Wedge nodded, getting to his feet and fumbling in his pouch for a coin that would cover this last round. His civilian pouch. And he really hated the awkward things. But it would hardly do for them to go wandering around town in full New Republic uniforms, complete with the distinctive Rogue Squadron patches. He found a proper size coin and dropped it into the center of the table as the others stood up. Where to now? Jansen asked, hunching his shoulders slightly to stretch out his back muscles. Back to the base, I think, Wedge told him.
Good, Jansen grunted. Morning's going to come early enough as it is.
Wedge nodded as he turned and headed toward the exit. Morning could come any time it wanted to, of course. Well, before then, they were going to be off this planet and driving hard toward their assigned rendezvous point outside the Bilbringi shipyards. They wove their way between the crowded tables, and as they did so, a tall, thin man shoved his chair back almost into Wedge's knees and got unsteadily to his feet.
Watch out, he slurred, half turning to throw his arms across Wedge's shoulders and much of his weight against Wedge's side.
Easy, friend, Wedge grunted, struggling to regain his balance. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw Jansen step to the tall man's other side and put a supporting arm around him.
Easy sounds good to me, the man murmured, the slurring abruptly gone as his arm tightened around Wedge's shoulders.
All four of us, nice and easy now. Let's help the poor old drunk out of here.
Wedge stiffened. Tracked, blindsided, and caught. And in the flip of an X-wing, they had suddenly gone from a simple night on the town to serious trouble. With him and Jansen tangled up like this, only Hobby was left with a clear gun hand. And their assailant surely hadn't forgotten to have some backup around.
The tall man must have felt Wedge's tension.
Hey, play it smooth, he admonished quietly. Don't remember me, huh?
Wedge frowned at the face, practically leaning against his. It didn't look familiar, but on the other hand, at this range, he probably wouldn't recognize his own mother.
Should I? He murmured back.
The other did a little more staggering.
I'd have thought so, he said in an injured voice. You go up against a Star Destroyer with someone, he ought to remember you, especially out in the middle of nowhere.
Wedge frowned a little harder at the face, dimly aware that the whole group had started walking.
In the middle of nowhere?
And suddenly it hit him. The Katana fleet, and Talon Karda's people coming out of nowhere to lend their assistance and firepower against the Imperials. And afterwards, the brief, preoccupied introductions aboard the Star Cruiser.
Aves?
That wasn't so hard, was it? The other said approvingly. Told you could do it if you tried. Come on now, nice and easy, and don't let's draw any more attention to ourselves than we need to.
There didn't seem to be any real option other than to comply. But even as Wedge continued toward the exit, he kept his eyes moving, looking for something they could use to get them out of this. Karda and his people had supposedly agreed to funnel information back to the New Republic, but that was a far way from being allies together. And if the Empire had threatened them, or just bought them outright. But no opportunity for escape presented itself before they got out the doors.
This way, Abe said, abandoning his drunk act and hurrying down the dimly lit and sparsely populated street.
Jensen caught Wedge's eye and raised his eyebrows questioningly. Wedge shrugged slightly in return and set off after Abe's. It could still be some sort of trap, but at this point the vague fears were being rapidly overtaken by simple curiosity. Something was going on, and he wanted to find out what.
He didn't have long to wonder about it. Two buildings down from the Mumbry Storve, Aves turned and disappeared into a darkened entryway. Wedge followed, half expecting to run into a half dozen blaster muzzles. But Aves was alone. "What now?" he asked as Jansen and Javi joined them. Aves nodded toward the street outside the entryway. "Watch," he said. "If I'm right, here he comes." Wedge looked. A walrus-faced aqualish strode quickly by, throwing a quick glance into the entryway as he passed. His stride broke, just noticeably. Then he caught himself and picked up his pace. He passed the other side of the entryway. There was a muffled thud, and suddenly the aqualish was back in the entryway, his slack and obviously unconscious form being supported by two grim-faced men. "Any trouble?" Aves asked. "Nah," one of the men said as they dropped the aqualish, none too gently, to the ground near the back of the entryway. "They're a lot meaner than they are smart." "This one was smart enough," Aves said. "Take a good look at him, Antilles. Maybe next time you'll recognize an Imperial spy when you pick one up." Wedge looked down at the alien. "An Imperial spy, huh?" "A freelancer, anyway," Aves shrugged. "Just as dangerous." Wedge looked back at him, trying to keep his expression neutral. "I suppose we ought to thank you," he said. One of the other men, busy searching the Aqualish's clothing, snorted under his breath. "I think you should, yeah," Aves said. "If it hadn't been for us, you'd have been a juicy little item in the next Imperial Intelligence report." "I suppose we would have," Wedge conceded, exchanging glances with Hobby and Jansen. But then that had been the idea of the whole charade, to do their bit to convince Grand Admiral Thrawn that Tangreen was still the New Republic's intended target. "What are you going to do with him?" he asked Aves. "We'll take care of him," Aves said. "Don't worry, he won't be making any reports anytime soon." Wedge nodded. One evening shot completely to flinders. Still, it was nice to know Carda's people were still on their side. "Thanks again," he said. "And meant it this time. I owe you one." Aves cocked his head. "You want to pay off the debt right now?" "How?" Wedge asked cautiously. "We've got a little job in the works," Aves said, waving a hand vaguely toward the night sky. "We know you do, too. It would help a lot if we could time ours to go while you're keeping Thrawn occupied." Wedge frowned at him. "What, you want me to tell you when our operation is starting?" "Why not?" Aves said reasonably. "Like I said, we already know it's in the works. Bel Iblis's repeat performance and all that." Wedge looked at his pilots again, wondering if they appreciated the irony of this as much as he did. Here they stood, an evening's worth of subtle hints gone straight down the proton tubes. And now they were being asked for an outright confirmation of the whole operation. Colonel Derlin's decoy team couldn't have set things up better if they'd tried. "I'm sorry," he said slowly, putting some genuine regret into his voice. "But you know I can't tell you that." "Why not?" Aves asked patiently. "Like I said, we already know most of it already. I can prove that if you want." "Not here," Wedge said quickly. The goal was to plant hints, not to be so obvious that it aroused suspicion. "Someone might hear you." Jansen tapped his arm. "Sir, we need to get back," he murmured. "There's a lot of work yet to do before we leave." I know," Wedge said. Good old Jansen, just the angle he'd been searching for. "Look, Aves, I tell you what I'll do. Are you going to stick around here for a while?" "I could. Why?" "Let me talk to my unit commander," Wedge said,
See if I can get a special clearance for you. Avi's expression showed pretty clearly what he thought of that idea. It's worth a try, he said diplomatically instead. How soon can you get an answer? I don't know, Wedge said. He's as busy as all the rest of us, you know. I'll try to get back to you one way or the other, but if you haven't heard from me in about 28 hours, don't expect to. Aves might have smiled slightly. Wedge couldn't tell in the dim light. All right, he said, grumbling a bit. I suppose it's better than nothing. You can leave any messages with the night bartender at the Doña Laza Tap Cafe. Okay, Wedge said. We've got to go. Thanks again. Together, he and the other two pilots left the entryway and crossed the street. They were two blocks away before Javi spoke. 28 hours, huh? Pretty clever. I thought so, Wedge agreed modestly. Leaving here, then, would get us to Tang Green just about on time for the big battle. Let's just hope he's planning to sell that information to the Empire, Jansen murmured. It'd be a shame to have wasted the whole evening. Oh, he'll sell it all right, Javi snorted. He's a smuggler. What else would he want it for? Wedge thought back to the Katana battle. Maybe that was indeed all Carda and his gang were. Fringe scum, always for sale to the highest bidder. But somehow, he didn't think so. We'll find out soon enough, he told Javi. Come on, like Jansen said, we've got a lot of work to do. Chapter 23. The last page scrolled across the display and stopped. Search summary ended. Next request? Cancel, Leia said, leaning back in her desk chair and looking out the window. Another dead end, just like the last one, and the one before that. It was beginning to look like the research librarians had been right. If there was any information on the old Clone Wars cloning technique still in the old Senate library, it was buried away so deeply that no one would ever find it. Across the room, she caught a flicker of returning consciousness. Standing up, she crossed to the crib and looked down on her children. Jason was indeed awake, cooing to himself, and making a serious effort to study his fingers. Beside him, Jaina was still asleep, her pudgy lips hanging open just enough to whistle softly with every breath. Hi there, Leia murmured to her son, picking him up out of the crib and cradling him in her arms. He looked up at her, his fingers momentarily forgotten, and smiled his wonderful toothless smile. Well, thank you, she said, smiling back and caressing his cheek. Come on, let's go see what's happening out in the big world. She carried him to the window. Beneath them, the Imperial City was in full mid-morning mayhem, with ground vehicles and air speeders buzzing along in all directions like frantic insects. Beyond the city, the snow-tipped peaks of the Manerai Mountains to the south were dazzling in the morning sunshine. Beyond the mountains, the sky was a deep and cloudless blue. And beyond the sky, she shivered. Beyond the sky was the planetary energy shield, and the Empire's invisible, deadly asteroids. Jason gurgled. Leia looked back down at him, found him studying her with what she could almost imagine to be concern. It's all right, she assured him, holding him a little closer and bouncing him gently in her arms. It's all right. We'll find them all and get rid of them. Don't you worry. Behind her, the door opened, and Winter came into the room, a hover tray floating along in front of her. Your Highness, she greeted Leia in a soft voice, I thought you might like some refreshment. Yes, I would, thank you, Leia said, sniffing at the gentle aroma of spiced paricha rising from the pot on the tray.
Anything happening downstairs?
Nothing interesting, Winter said,
pushing the tray over to a side table and starting to unload it.
The search teams haven't found any new asteroids since yesterday morning. I understand General Belliblis has been suggesting they may already have cleared them all out.
I doubt Admiral Drayson believes that.
No,
Winter agreed, holding out a steaming mug and waiting as Leia shifted Jason to a one-armed grip.
Neither does Mon Mothma.
Leia nodded as she accepted the mug. To be honest, she didn't really believe it herself. No matter how expensive these cloaking shields might be to produce, she couldn't see the Empire going to this much trouble for anything fewer than 70 cloaked asteroids. And there could easily be twice that many. The 21 they'd found hardly even scratched the surface.
How is the research going?
Winter asked, pouring a mug for herself.
It's not, Leia had to admit.
From one insoluble problem to another, it seemed.
Though I don't know why that should surprise me.
The Council research specialists have already been all through the records, and they didn't find anything.
But you're a Jedi, Winter reminded her. You have the Force.
Not enough of it, apparently. Leia shook her head. At least, not enough to guide me to the right archive. If there is a right archive, I'm not sure anymore that there is. For a minute, they sipped in silence. Leia savored the soft flavor of the hot koricha, acutely aware that this could easily be her last taste of it for a while. All supplies of the root from which the drink was made had to be imported from off-planet.
I was talking to Moff Baykar yesterday, Winter said into her thoughts. He said you'd spoken to him about a clue of some sort, something that Mara Jade had said.
Something that Mara said, coupled with something Luke did, Leia nodded.
Yes, I remember, and I still think there's an important key in there somewhere. I just can't figure out what it is.
At her waist, her comlink beeped.
I knew it couldn't last.
Leia sighed, putting her mug down and pulling the comlink out.
Mothma had promised her a complete morning off. Obviously, that promise was about to be bent a little.
Counselor Organa Solo, she said into the device.
But it wasn't Mon Mothma. Counselor, this is Central Communications, a brisk military voice said. There's a civilian freighter called the Wild Karda holding position just outside the sentry line. The captain insists on speaking with you personally. Do you want to talk to him, or shall we just go ahead and chase him out of the system?
So Karda had finally come to pick up his people, or else had been listening to rumors and had decided to poke around Coruscant a little for himself. Either way, it was trouble.
This book is continued on cassette number 11, side.